Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of B2B Pipeline Pioneers. Changing things up a bit since we've learned from our audience and from all of our wonderful speakers that while we're investing in different channels and we're all looking at what is the best way to go to market, we're finding that a lot of go-to-market problems can be solved with a well-defined ICP. That's the ideal customer profile, aka your target segment, aka your target accounts. There are many ways that people refer to this, but we like to use ICP because it's very focused on the company and the persona makeup that you're looking at. So to talk about ICPs with us here today, we have the fabulous Jen with Go Nimbly. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's get this started and tell me a little bit more about Go Nimbly's ICP.
Cool. So Go Nimbly is a SaaS consulting company, meaning that like we are very focused in consulting for SaaS companies. And when we look broadly at the market, we really nail it for mid-market and enterprise level SaaS companies. And you can mix that up in a couple of different ways. A decently sized sales team, so I need more than 10 reps. I usually look for, if I'm really looking ideal, 500 or more employees, $25 million or more in revenue. And then I look for a couple of different complexities that they might have because we love a big, hairy, complex workflow. So I'm looking for usage-based, you know, companies that might have complexities like forecasting for usage or, you know, tracking sales for usage-based companies. So I'm looking for that, or companies that have a PLG and a PLS workflow that typically creates a lot of complexity. So I'm looking for some of these signals in their go-to-market strategies. Growing companies will have operational problems because their company is changing so drastically. So I'm looking for that. And then our persona, you know, ideally it's like a CRO or a director plus within RevOps. RevOps starts to get a little hairy because you've got some folks that split sales, marketing, CS ops. You have some folks that, you know, centralize that. Some people call it go-to-market ops or business operations. We're just looking for the operators, you know, within the business to sell to.
Gotcha. So really, and I love how defined you have this to this point. You could probably have a few more points in here, but really understanding it's SaaS companies, it's in mid-market, it's in this space. How did you validate that specific ICP? How did you determine your ICP?
By doing it wrong. truly, I think, you know, what's interesting is we really love SaaS, right? I find it like it's an industry that we really like. And I say we, me and my business partner, Troy. And my business partner, Troy, is in San Francisco. And I think he also was very passionate about the startup space. And he liked kind of a series A and B. He liked the energy of that. But over time, we realized that like we might love it and think it's really fun, but we're actually not set up to do both. And we are much better at the mid-market and enterprise. And I'll give you an example. An early stage company should build in scrappy ways. They should build in production. They should test things. They should move really quickly. They should not build for scale. I know that's like a wild thing for an operator to say. There are certain things that they should put in place, but like go build different rules, go change the way you think about your lead routing, and you should do that very quickly. And if you work with us, we actually will slow you down because we care about deployment best practices and we care about data models and we care about aligning the entire business on something. And we pride ourselves on breaking down silos, whether that's people or data or integrations. Like we're trying to do things in a very like agile, we still want to move quickly, but in a very thoughtful and deliberate way. And that doesn't work for the early stage startup. The type of person you hire, how you train them, your processes, like all of that is different. And so even though we knew the way, you know, we knew the future of these companies, we knew where they were going and how to set them up, they just weren't ready for the way that we worked. So we, you know, again, by doing it wrong, by stretching ourselves and realizing, oh, wow, we're not fast for them. We're actually fast for mid-market and enterprise because we know how to do that quickly, but we have a lot of overhead for younger companies that they don't need.
Gotcha. So then that was determining the size. How did you also determine the operations people specifically? Has that have to do with the services that you provide, or are there other personas within any one account that you can also try to penetrate?
Yeah. So, I mean, we definitely go beyond that. The person that we really help right away is the individual within the RevOps team. And the reason for that is there's two big pains that revenue operators have. I think one is they're underwater. That's sort of like the easiest one. And most RevOps teams are underwater because every time your company grows and doubles in size, your whole business changes, your systems, your processes. It's a lot of burden for this persona. And so we quickly give them bandwidth. So that person kind of is the one where on day one, we help them. When we think about go-to-market leaders, which we really want engaged and we want to be working with, we help them once we deploy something, once we fix a process, once we, you know, kind of give them, you know, the outcome. And so we want to nurture them and we want requirements from them. For example, we want to take them on the journey, but we're working day to day with our kind of director of RevOps and our RevOps folks. And then on top of that, when we do work around the, you know, product-led sales space, that one is so broad. Because we're working with the marketing team, we're working with the sales team, we're working with the product team, we're working with the finance team. It is one of those types of initiatives that is across the board. Same thing with like a CPQ implementation. We're working with all of them. And so for those types of deals, we really want to go broad. But for our core, hey, the RevOps team needs bandwidth or specific expertise that they don't have, we're really looking for operators.
Gotcha. So then tell me a little bit more about the campaigns that you ran, because you said, hey, we learned by doing this wrong. Can you give me an example of the campaign that you ran to really provide awareness to that ICP, how mm-hmm. you're going to market to that ICP?
Yeah, I'm going to A to C a little your question because, you know, we're still a pretty kind of small and nimble team. And I wouldn't say we're running kind of large scale campaigns. We did do it a few years ago. We definitely got on the hype curve of ABM, and we had a full-time designer on staff at one point at a 30-person company. And we were building all of these very specific ads and doing specific ad targeting. Like, for example, I'm going to give a random company name, but we were building ads that were like Go Nimbly plus Snowflake. And we were custom creating these ads and paying quite a lot of money to get them in front of that business and expecting them to just want to buy Go Nimbly all of a sudden. Like, we just went to the extreme and like very, very specific, sending very specific gifts and going after very specific people, and just pretty quickly realized like it doesn't scale for us and it's too expensive for or the size team that we are. So I've taken a different approach to the kinds of campaigns that I do. I know, I'm going to give you a little framework that I really love. Have you ever gone a little deep into the kind of Disney World, or have you been to Disney World or Disneyland?
Yes, have been to Disney World before a few times.
Okay. So Disney World obviously takes a lot of care in the experience of the people that visit. And there's a really lovely book. I think it's called Peak Experiences or Peak or something along those lines. And they talk about and they use the use case of Disney World. And what I got out of it is they have this concept of creating a peak experience for their guests. They curate everything. Like if you, there's a very specific example of how people that work at the park, if they're picking up garbage, they will kind of like do it in a dancey way. They'll squat and pick it up and keep walking. They won't like, you won't see people like crouched cleaning up the park. And so this, like, they're really curating the experience. And they talk about creating peak experiences in four ways. It's this framework called Epic. And you can either do elevation, if I remember, pride, insights, connection. All right. So these are like the four things you can do to create a peak experience for someone. Mm-hmm. So elevation is like take a normal moment, something that might be mundane, and make it beyond the routine, right? Like this like unexpected moment. Okay. So give them sort of like something they weren't expecting. You can think about this in product too. I don't know. You close win an opportunity and there's confetti. It could be as small as that, or it could be in an actual event. I don't know, a guest or a musical guest that like, I don't know, Elton John at Dreamforce, you're elevating it. Yeah. Pride is basically making someone feel pride. So award shows, making them feel valued, making them feel recognized. Insight, teaching them something that they didn't know before. Give them insight about their business or themselves or something that like gives them basically newfound knowledge. And then connection, connecting people maybe that weren't connected or creating connection. And that's how I think about our campaigns and our go-to-market. I do dinners, like a couple every quarter. And the way I think about it is I'm going to bring operators that should know each other. So super curated again, like, all right, let me get operators at PLG companies to have dinner, or operators that do usage-based forecasting at dinner. And I even, when I figure out the couple people that I want, I go look at their connections in that city and I go find people that they may have already known. So everybody's got at least a buddy or like someone that I know that they know. And I curate that list. And I'm really focused on that connection piece and on that insight piece. So like they're going to learn something and they're going to connect. I do the same thing on virtual roundtables. So similar kind of thing. And I learned my lesson. I used to try to make these roundtables. I used to try to insert a little like elevate or like, you know, in the experience in there. But I realized my persona just wants to learn about what other companies are doing. And they want to connect with other people in similar roles and kind of network in that way. So I used to do like send people wine and have somebody at the front teach them about wine. And I could see the people glossing over in that first kind of 30 minutes of someone teaching them about a wine, like, and half of them not even opening the bottle. Like maybe there were one or two that were really interested, but like now I'm trying to guess that they also want to learn about wine. Like they don't want to learn about wine from me. They want to learn about how SaaS companies operate. So I really kind of honed into that. And this idea of connection and insights is the biggest thing I can, you know, provide my customers and my team.
No, that's a great lesson learned, because often when we think of, especially like, here's another E for you, like experiential, mm-hmm. and let's have all of these things and get our ICP to this event and then try to wow them with like some flash, oh goodness, what's the term? Like flash, not baristas, like bartenders. They're doing like tricks or dinner or you're cooking together, but you've already identified it's they want to learn about operations for me. They could care less about wine. They'll learn about that from someplace else. What other lessons did your team learn along the way through this process?
There's one other big thing is we used to do a lot of sponsorships at events. So we would have a booth or, you know, sponsor a specific community or a dinner, etc. And I found, and I don't think this is a blanket statement for everybody, but I found that it didn't really work for us. I think one, it's services. It's a very hard thing to just like kind of blankly pitch at somebody. Is like, and you have to build a lot of trust in services. I can't just demo something. And what I've learned about my customer is when somebody wants to buy services, imagine somebody is interested. They're not typically that excited. There is the one time when they're about to implement something very cool and they have like a new project that they're excited about and they want to bring expertise, but typically they've either been failing at it. So they've realized they don't have the skill set for it, or they've lost somebody on their team and they're like underwater, or maybe their job's even on the line. Like it is a very, kind of stressful time when you're buying services and highly skeptical. I have the problem that when I'm pitching services, there's a benefit for me to blow up the scope, right? And so there's this like just innate distrust that you really have to get over in a sales cycle when you are pitching somebody services. And I'm very candid. I'm very transparent. I give everybody like everything in a sales cycle because I know that. I think it's very important for somebody to be able to make a good choice. But that's what I learned is like, it's very hard to do that in a booth. I'm not big enough to be able to like, do it just for brand recognition. And so I've cut out that and just realized if I'm allowed to speak at an event, that goes much farther. If I can host a dinner around that event. So instead of having a booth and having to man it and do all of that, do I do a breakfast beforehand? Do I do a dinner afterwards? Do I create something like the day before or the day after? So trying to like latch on to big events, but not necessarily be doing kind of the basic. And I think people are really doing booths wrong. The amount of money that you're spending to get yourself a booth sponsorship, and then you have your reps sitting there eating lunch and you didn't take the time to train them on the pitch, think about an opener, teach them how they're going to book a meeting. And also you're putting your most junior people in this booth, like go get people that can have executive level conversations if your audience is an executive. So I just think that that's changing. And I am seeing companies like, I know one of the founders at SaaStock, and he's really thinking about sponsorships differently, like how to help people get the most out of a booth experience, for example, or how to elevate it and actually do meetups or you know, schedule time before and use the conference as a time to have meetings. So that's another one that I've like really been thinking about, how to change my relationships to events, I guess.
No, and it's good to have this reflection of what is it that your ICP is truly engaging with, because sponsorships have been there for a long time, and I don't think they're going anywhere, because to your point, they can work for some businesses, but even then you have to run the play correctly.
Yes.
So then let's shift a little bit. I'm going to share my screen and we'll dig into that a bit more, because knowing your ICP, and if you're not going to be investing in events, I'd be very curious to see where you are going to be spending your pennies.
Yeah. So in a way, I actually am spending a lot of money on events. I'm just not doing event sponsorship. So I'm doing dinners around events. I'm doing virtual roundtables. I'm doing events on, you know, dinners on my own. I'm actually even thinking of throwing a conference next year. So I am, for right now, at least putting two little coins under events. I think we're doing a good bit of that.
Two events. Okay. Maybe we'll end up with more there from just the sheer amount of events.
Yeah, we might put more in there. And then there is ultimately, we're primarily selling through founder. Kind of, it's still a lot of my network and my business partner's network. And so maybe I'd put another, let's do three on there. I think we're kind of expensive.
So we're going to put three in founder.
Mm-hmm.
Got five.
And I might have to move them around. We didn't talk a lot about this, but we're doing a lot with partnerships. And so part of my like big partnerships bets, we're doing a lot with Gong, with Chili Piper, with Clay. And so not only doing services for them, but also I mentioned that event that I want to do, a big conference, and all those names that I mentioned are going to come behind us and actually sponsor our event and make that happen. So let's put another two in partnerships.
All right. So from the 100 pennies game, you have 3 pennies left.
Yeah. Oh, can I split them even more? Or are these each worth 10?
These are each worth 10.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm going to put one under brand, because we just have, there's a couple things that I would put on there. One, we're going to launch a new logo next month. So I'm excited. And we did a bunch of new brand messaging work on it. But I also do we could claim it's a little bit of like community maybe or content, but I put out a weekly video called This Week in SaaS, where I cover the news about something going on in SaaS. Again, I market and work only with SaaS companies, so showing that like this is an area that we're pretty obsessed with. I'm going to call that a little bit under brand, because I'm not converting into anything. But that's a big piece of it. And then let's do the other two. Oh, it's funny. You want to put it everywhere, but let's do one in community. And I like, we are involved in a few communities. We keep up with the Slack groups. I show up to their events. So we're spending more time there than we are money. But we're spending a good amount of time there. And then the last one I would put under customer-led growth. And the thing that I think is unique about the way that we are thinking about how all of these work together is we have a pretty nimble team. I've got a full-time, I would say 1.5, maybe you could call it 2, full-time folks within kind of marketing. And one of the things that I'm trying to figure out is where are the places where I can do like a 1 + 1 = 3. And one of the ways that we're doing that is when we launch a customer story, I choose a customer, obviously. I then ideally have a partner involved. So maybe I do a story about how X customer used Gong and got a lot of value out of it. So I'm also doing partner marketing through that. And then we might throw an event or a roundtable about that same subject. And so I am trying to figure out like, how do I take one of these 10-cent coins and hit, you know, multiple parts of this? And, you know, of course we've got sales, but I'm putting that actually more on founder-led, because our founding team is primarily the sales team. And then marketing is showing up in all those other ones. And we certainly are doing some product-led growth. I would say consulting is always that in a sense. Like my consultants are always selling in a way, right? They're always showing new work and trying to do that. But I don't have a PLG motion, because I don't have an actual product.
Yeah, and that's, again, not every part of go-to-market fits for every business, and especially yes. services. I like how you're saying that if we're always kind of adjusting our product based on what our consultants are seeing. So that's a really good, really good way of looking at this. Okay, so Jen, to recap, where you've spent your pennies, we have 10 in community, 20 in partnerships, 10 in customer, 10 in brand, 30 in founder, and then 20 in event. So now that we have where you're spending your pennies, let's take a look at this from the community perspective. So back when we did the initial interviews, we saw this as the benchmark. Mm-hmm. So a lot of sales led, a little bit of marketing. So that's in the blue here, but then I'm going to take this and do just an update and you should be able to see your stats now in mm-hmm. orange. That are there. So now that you're seeing the data compared side by side, what do you notice here?
Well, I think this is nuanced because I don't know the size of your, you know, community that's doing this, but founder led is always going to be much earlier stage. We're 50 employees or just about. And so obviously we're going to have a much bigger founder led. So that makes a lot of sense. And then the two areas that I'm very consistent on, you know, what I'm spending time on, I'm happy to see us that customers are bigger than others, because I do believe that customers, especially at a services company, are in the center of everything we do. And then partnerships, we are making big bets this year on partnerships. So I'm not too surprised by this. And then I don't have a, you know, the biggest spike you have here is 40 under sales led. And I don't have, you know, my sales, that's where my founder one is. So you could kind of replace, my biggest is also sales. So it's kind of the same. It's just that for me, founders are sales.
Yeah. And it's a different way of going to market. It's a different way of investing your time and energy. So instead of having a huge sales organization that's going through leads and making calls, you're bootstrapping that through your founders and trying to make that work for your organization. And that makes a lot of sense based on what you've told me. But Jen, thank you so much for sharing time and your expertise and sharing a little bit more about your ICP and how you're going to market to win their hearts, their minds, and well, their business, because this is all about building pipeline, right?
Of course.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.